This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And we have a special guest on a special day. William Henson Moore III is in studio. He is celebrating his 80th birthday, born the 4th of October, 1939. You're laughing. He looks, as they say, fit as a fiddle. And perhaps it's because he retired from Congress many moons ago. He, of course, served this area in Baton Rouge for a dozen years, and then ran for the U.S. Senate and lost a close race to John Berlinger Brough. But he was active in politics, deputy chief of staff for President George H.W. Bush, deputy energy secretary, a lobbyist of note. But he's been back home for a few years, and today will be a special day for the Moore family. It all began 80 years ago today in Lake Charles, Louisiana, and Congressman Moore, happy birthday.
Well, thank you, Jim, but it began in Lake Charles only because the ferry was running. I was from Hackberry. Back then, they didn't have a bridge, and you had a ferry, and it was a broken-down four-car ferry. If the ferry hadn't been running, I'd have been born at the ferry landing in Hackberry.
Well, you were born 4 years after Huey Long died, right in the middle of the Great Depression. President Roosevelt was in the middle of his 12 years in office, and we were about to go to war. In the war that, of course, perhaps was more significant than any other, if there is any such animal, World War II. So you've been through some things as a young person. How was it growing up in that time?
Well, it was, you grow up in those times and you don't really think about it in terms of a context. Is it crazier now than it was then? You just kind of go through life and do your best. I could remember the end of World War II. I didn't really know what was going on. I was up in my grandparents' house in Center, Texas on the town square. He was the town jailer. And we're sitting there when the VJ Day occurred. It was my first memory. All I remember is fire trucks and people and everybody shouting hosannas. Then I remember the beginning of the war in Korea. I was at camp as a young kid at a YMCA camp. But those things were not as momentous as a young man growing up as how you were going to do playing baseball that day or whatever.
Well, you went off to LSU and got 2 degrees there.
Three.
B.A., J.D., and M.A., that's right. 1, 2, 3. 3 degrees more than some members of Congress have. But Congressman Moore also served in the military, 1965 to 1967. And this was at a time when some others in your generation were avoiding the military like the plague. You didn't go to Vietnam, but you could have, and you did go overseas. What happened in that realm?
Well, I always wanted to go to Europe. I thought that'd be a great thing. I'd never been out of the country except on my honeymoon. My wife and I went to Mexico. So, oddly enough, I got a call from the Pentagon one day after my last final exam in law school asking me where I'd like to go. The Vietnam War at that point was very small, and there were just really advisors more than there were military units there. And so I was not an advisor for anybody, so I said, hey, I'd love to go to Germany, and that's where they sent me. And then about that time when I got there, Lyndon Johnson was president, started sending troop units over, and very quickly there was a buildup. And all the senior officers in Germany when I got there were all sent to Vietnam. So I became a captain and a company commander almost overnight. And then they came back around and said, if you have over a year to go, we're going to send you to Vietnam. I had something like 6 months to go on my two-year tour. So Lyndon Johnson was running for president and didn't want the political stigma of full mobilization and keeping everybody in the military. So he let us come home. And I had one child at that point and one on the way. So my wife said, if they want you in Vietnam, they'll send you. Otherwise, we're going home.
Well, Henson Moore did come home. And at the age of 34, with those 3 degrees from LSU, he decided to run for Congress. And it's one of the most memorable congressional races in U.S. history.
That's a record civics, nobody wants to repeat.
Civics books. There was a recount. The first vote, and it was a contested vote, had Henson Moore ahead 61,034 to 61,020 for Jeff Lacaze, 14 votes. And there was a recount. Well, there wasn't a recount. There was a re-election, another election, and Henson Moore won that one by a pretty substantial margin. He got 54% of the votes, but it was touch and go as to whether you would ever be a member of Congress, and you're running as a Republican in the days when Republicans were not
welcome. Well, I didn't really run as a Republican. I was one, but I didn't tell anybody. And so that never appeared in any of my political literature.
Didn't you have that little R on the ballot, though?
I would just say, if your guy doesn't win, vote for me. Yeah, so they never figured that out, I think, or they voted for me in spite of being a Republican.
But that first election, Jeff LaCaz, that was, you know, that's an amazing thing. That first of all, there was a heavy turnout, over 120,000 votes in a congressional race in 1974, and 14 votes, and I think it was a precinct on Roosevelt Street wasn't it?
And a machine broke there, and my opponent Jeff LaCaz, a great guy, been a sportscaster at Channel 2, had some really good lawyers, and so they went to court and said, look, if that machine hadn't broken, our candidate would have won. And Melvin Shortis was the judge, a great judge. He's still with us. And I knew him as being a very fair and good judge, although that had nothing to do with his ruling. But we basically just said, hey, look, you can't really pick a winner in a race. I mean, I won by the votes you could count. And that's what Wade O. Martin was willing to certify me as the winner. He was Secretary of State then. But the judge kind of, he didn't feel good about that. And so finally we said to him, look, we won, but we understand the problem and we're willing to run it again. The other side didn't want to do that. They knew something I didn't, and that was we were winning, catching him in the polls. And actually, on Election Day, the second time round went way beyond the polls and what we had had. It was the closest, Jim, congressional race in the history of the country at that time. There's been one closer, got down to 12 votes. But ours was the closest federal election in history. That's a heck of a way to get in the record books.
But you served six terms. And then ran for the U.S. Senate, and you, I covered that race. I was 26 in 1984, and you were the favorite. And Ronald Reagan, a popular president, was for you, and you ran first in the primary, and then John Breaux won the runoff. And that had to be a severe disappointment to you.
Well, it was, but it was new ground again, just like when I ran for Congress. There'd never really been a serious Republican-Democrat two-congressman congressional race in the history of the country. And that basically we didn't know, and the odds were with John because the state had never voted for a Republican in a majority for the Senate like it has now. Matter of fact, Bernie Pinsenot, the great pollster, told me that some years after my race, it became possible in the minds of Louisianians to vote for a Republican for the Senate. But back then, they just saw two good guys and didn't see a reason for voting for something they'd never voted for before. And interestingly enough, I learned a hard lesson in politics. There were 13 people in that race, a lot of office holders, state senators, and the commissioner of insurance, as well as two sitting congressmen. And that while I won the first race and beat all of them by a majority,
and
by,
you got almost, if I remember, 45% of the votes
The problem was in the runoff, all the rest of the guys were Democrats. And so it's just a reverse today with John Bel Edwards that he's going to run first. And what's going to happen in a runoff?
If there is one,
if he doesn't get a majority in the first run.
It could be like you.
Exactly. Except I'm not sure that's going to happen because my observation of politics is that the people are not voting in local races, in gubernatorial races, like they do necessarily in national campaigns. They see governors as being, you're taking care of my problems in my state. Don't mix up national politics in it, and I'll vote for you.
Well, quite often in elections, unfortunately, we have choices in which we don't like either candidate. But that was one where you had two superstars of the same vintage, you and Congressman Breaux then, who became Senator Breaux. And we would have done, I think, as a state very well with either one. And we did with John Breaux, who was a relatively conservative to moderate Democrat. And we see this occasionally right now. Your former colleague, Beverly Brooks Thompson, she's running, and she's got two Republicans who are exceptional people, Franklin Foyle and Steve Carter. That district, I think you're in it, I'm in it. Mm-hmm. I think any of those three would serve the people of that district well. And sometimes in Louisiana, we have good people running in spite of ourselves.
Well, you know, you're exactly right. That's the way it ought to be. Everybody voting for every office ought to have a choice of good candidates. And then you just pick the best one, and boy, we're all winners, no matter who wins.
But right now, as we know, it's very partisan, and it's not only partisan in Washington, it's partisan in Baton Rouge and all over this country. And we're going to talk in our next segment about what happened in American politics. When Henson Moore lost to John Brough, he's told this story before, but he actually showed up at a Brough fundraiser uninvited and gave John Brough a check to help retire his campaign debt. That would not happen today. And, of course, John Brough went into business after leaving Congress with his Republican colleague, Trent Lott. That would not happen today. But we'll talk with Henson Moore on his 80th birthday, what's going on in Washington and beyond. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, and we continue our conversation for another segment with Henson Moore on his 80th birthday. He was born on October 4th, 1939. 4 years later, by the way, Buddy Romer was born. Happy 76th birthday today to Charles Elson Buddy Romer III, who served in Congress with Henson Moore, and another Louisiana person, H. Rapp Brown, born on the same day as Buddy Romer. Two revolutionaries. H. Rapp Brown, born right here in Baton Rouge. But October 4th is a big day in Louisiana lore, and Henson Moore has had quite a life at the highest levels of government. And we talked about his disappointing loss in 1986 for U.S. Senate, but you certainly rebounded well, and you served with a man now regarded as one of the finest men, not necessarily president, although some believe he was a good president too, George H.W. Bush, and you were present at his funeral. That had to be quite an experience.
It was, but, you know, I kind of felt like that we were invited, and it was by invitation, and we felt like we had to go. I was there with him during the last year of his presidency, and then kept up a relationship with him. He'd been a friend of my father's, as a matter of fact. They were friends, and he had known me politically early on in his various stages, so he's somebody that I had a very high regard for. But I'd gone duck hunting, and his office in Houston was trying to find me to see if I was going to accept the invitation and come to the funeral. That's just like George Bush. He cared about the people he knew, and that the people he trained that worked for him were the same way. So I get back, and my wife from duck hunting, my wife says, they've been calling you for 3 days. At the duck camp, the cell phone wouldn't work. And this lady got on the phone. She said, look, are you coming or not? We've been trying to get a hold of you for 3 days. And so we were a day late getting there, but we got there in time for the funeral.
Well, Henson Moore served well under President Bush, and as we talked earlier about the partisanship in Washington and elsewhere, George Bush was attacked, some believe unfairly, but successfully by President Clinton in the 1992 campaign. And Henson Moore, of course, was right there at his side as George Bush suffered a defeat as he was trying for re-election. But he and Clinton became fast friends, and now it's an amazing union of a Democrat and a Republican from different generations, too. They were 22 years apart. In fact, Clinton's a little bit younger than George Bush II. But that would not happen today either. What has happened in our political process with people in red shirts and blue shirts, and you better not hang out with the other side? Yeah.
Jim, you put your finger on the real problem in politics today. I don't think it's partisanship as much as it may be a lack of civility coupled with the normal partisanship. In Washington, people play for keeps, and it's a tough game. It's a blood sport. Never been easy, but there used to be rules of civility that don't seem to exist now. And it was never taken personally. It was never meant to be personally. You fought over an issue. The next day, that fellow you fought with might be your ally on another one. And so you work together. Today, that's not the case. And a day doesn't go by. Somebody doesn't ask me, aren't you glad you aren't there now? What's the problem? And I've thought about it, and I've thought about it, given a couple of speeches. You heard one of them to Rotary over the years about why I think that is. And today, I really say it's a lack of civility. And what worries me, politicians tend to reflect the people. I'm wondering not so much down south, not so much in Louisiana, but maybe other parts of the country, our people are becoming uncivil. When you text people instead of talking to them, when you email them instead of talking to them because you don't want confrontation, you don't treat people the same as you're sitting across the table and talking to them. You're more civil, I find. I don't know what the problem is, but I mean, I don't know why it is, but I do know, I think the real problem is civility. I was just reading a book that Eric Voegelin, probably one of the world's most famous political scientists, and had two degrees in political science. He taught at LSU. There was a passage in a book just read about him that said, just because the world is going in the wrong direction doesn't mean you have to go with it. You can personally oppose it in your life and in your relations. And that's the perfect antidote, I think, to the lack of civility.
Well, you ran and won in the year of 1974, which, of course, was the Watergate year. And it was right after President Nixon had resigned his office. And it wasn't a good year for Republicans. Now we have President Trump under fire. Is this time analogous to that one?
Oh, I think it's much worse. I think because of the lack of civility, I mean, what people call people now publicly on either side of the aisle, moron, traitor, whatever, you wouldn't do that back in President Nixon's day. You wouldn't do it in the time I was there. It's gone down. It's spiraled downwards to where you almost hate the opponent. Mm-hmm. You consider him an enemy, not to be defeated, but be crushed. How can you work together on a common problem facing the country if you've got that kind of antagonism on both sides of the aisle and from the president to the Congress? You can't.
You served six of your 12 years in the House under President Reagan. Of course, now in retrospect, President Reagan is remembered as a good, and in some cases people rank him as one of the great presidents. How was that experience?
Well, it was an interesting experience that I was in the House then, not in his administration, but would get called to the White House to meet with him because I had my own ideas about how doing things, and he was the president, and he expected me to toe the line with him.
Did you ever vote against him?
Yeah, I think I did. I think there was a tax bill that I was not happy with, but how it treated Louisiana. And I think John Breaux and I both voted against it on the House floor. But when it came back as a conference report, I think they had corrected our problems. I don't remember what the details were. We both voted for it. But he was somebody that was civil and you liked. And if you remember, when he won, I guess his second election against Dukakis, I think he carried every state but one or two.
He carried 40.
I mean, how can anybody do that today with the hard lines and lack of civility we have? But people liked Ronald Reagan. He was a cheerful person. He had things he believed in. You knew where he stood. He would push you to support those things. Strong national defense, no new taxes. Those were his two hallmarks. And as long as you didn't mess with those, there was room for you to get along with him. As a Democrat, I'm thinking. But in any event, those days were days that the Democrats controlled the House, and in some part of his years, they controlled the Senate as well. Yet he passed legislation, and he passed it with the help of Democrats, like the big tax bill that I voted on. It was the first tax bill, the last tax bill, rather, since the one in 2017 passed by President Trump and the Congress. He did that with Democratic support.
Now, when you left Congress, I just wrote this down, and I remember because the people were so vivid. Here was our congressional delegation, and we had eight members then in the House: Romer, Huckabee, Lindy Boggs, Gillis Long, John Breaux, Henson Moore, Billy Tozan, Bob Livingston, and the two U.S. senators were Russell Long and J. Bennett Johnston. Mm-hmm. Now, with that group, you got a lot of things done. And now in Louisiana, we don't have that kind of seniority. Do we have the same mojo? And we have two less seats, too. Do we have the same mojo now that we did then?
I don't really know. I'm not on the inner council with those fellows. But I can tell you, back in my day with them, we worked out our differences in private. And we all got along because we had to get along for the benefit of Louisiana. And we didn't mess with each other's elections. I mean, we just had I think Joe Wagner, when Dave Treen got there, he was the first Republican. And then I got there as the second one. And Joe Wagner got everybody together and said, look, we're going to work for Louisiana. We're going to get along. If we got disagreements, let's talk about them in private, not in public, and let's don't campaign against one another, Republican or Democrat. And we didn't. And so we had a, I don't know what you'd call it, a detente or whatever, but it was basically people who were more concerned about getting things done than they were partisan politics. And we were certainly civil back in those days. I never forget that the titan back then, when I first got there, was F. Edward Hebert, a long-serving congressman from New Orleans, chairman of the Armed Services Committee. He had a car pick me up at the airport when I got there, and he helped me with the kid. I never called him Eddie. It was Mr. Hebert.
There you go. Well, as we part, what does this birthday mean to you?
Thank you.
I mean, what significance does this, the big 8-0, what does it mean?
Well, it really, if you're lucky enough, and I'm lucky, that it doesn't seem any different than being 70. I do everything I do. Enjoy life immensely, and I'm blessed to be able to live this long to see grandchildren grow up.
Well, Henson Moore has served his country with distinction in Louisiana and in Washington at high levels, and he came back home where he lives not far from LSU, his three-time alma mater, and a few years ago raised about $800 million for the university. So thank you for what you've done for this community and the university that's the flagship one in our state. Thank you, Henson Moore.
Thank you, Jim.
Happy birthday.